You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. Sidekick Psychic Josh is here, although he is 5 minutes late. Where the f*** have you been?
I was busy celebrating Dermot's good news.
That's
where I was.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, shout out to TV's Dermot O'Leary, my season ticket buddy, who is having his first child.
Congratulations.
I mean, he isn't. His lovely wife, Dee, is having their first child, but it's very exciting, yeah.
I imagine Arsenal will be sending the Arsenal Baby Grow, the Arsenal Junior Kit, every single kiddie bit of equipment from the armoury store is heading his way.
Yeah, and if he's a boy and he's not called Liam, I'll be furious, frankly. Named after Arsenal's greatest
player. Interesting.
Get
the betting markets open on it.
Yeah, I mean, because Irish, I would put full bet on Liam Brady because he's an Irish man, Dermot's Irish, obviously. And I know we've met Liam Brady, we were there together, and he's a great man. And I think he's an awareness of how good Liam Brady was. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just early steer.
What's the most direct female equivalent of Liam?
David could work, actually, as well.
David could work, you're right, yeah. He's a big fan of David O'Leary, yeah. That is the voice of Graham Goodkind, who joins us. What should we call you? PR Guru, I'm calling you?
I like that one, yeah. Carry on with that, yeah.
PR Guru. And we're joined by Dan Roebuck, a voice of Arsenal.
Yes.
Among other things.
Correct.
I usually say
true.
The voice.
I know.
I've changed
it. That completely...
Because you're so modest.
Yeah,
you're definitely a voice of Arsenal.
Yes, and there are multiple voices. Yeah. I am one of them, that's very true.
And you were at Burnley yesterday.
I was
presumably commentating on said game.
Yes, I was for Arsenal's Arsenal Nation show and service. Yeah, it was an interesting trip to Burnley, as it always is. they sit us on the sort of row next to the... I mean, Burnley's an old-fashioned ground turf moor, as you would imagine. So the press seats at the back of the main stand are basically just an extra line of regular seats, and we are right next to the fans. So when I'm sort of getting excited about Arsenal players having opportunities, it's fairly deathly silence in front of me, and I might get a bit excited.
Oh, God.
And I had various sort of Burnley fans turning around to me and giving me a little bit of stick throughout the game.
Yeah, they didn't hold back, do they, Burnley fans?
No, they don't.
I mean, you can't blame them, but they were vociferously booing every single thing. They were booing... David Luiz from the start, which is because he
said something when he was at Chelsea.
Yeah, he said they were not football.
Anti-football.
Anti-football, that's it. Yeah.
So I didn't know this at the time.
No, me neither.
Yeah, we said, why is he booing? We got some emails in saying this is the reason.
Well, I Googled it. And
but they're brought up like that in Burnley anyway.
Well, I mean,
they're taught to boo everything from an early age.
They are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's effective because it creates quite an intimidating atmosphere, I think. But I think it goes slightly too far when they're booing our young 18-year-old, you know, test trial fullback when he's genuinely injured and has to go off. But anyway, yeah, we'll get... So we should talk about the game. My initial thought was... I like to start with my pompous initial thought. Was this is the first time in the Arteta era that I felt it was slightly gone wrong. And I felt like from the team selection through to the tactics, particularly mainly the team selection, to be honest. Like, I feel like every team selection Arteta's made so far since he's arrived, I've completely agreed with. I mean, I'm sure Mikel's very pleasantly surprised that I agree with his team selection. I'm probably furious that I don't agree with this one. But to me, you pick when he's picking, he's not picking Torreira. He picked Guendouzi over Torreira because Guendouzi had a good game in the cup, and he dropped Pepe. And to incorporate Martinelli and Aubameyang and Lacazette and Ozil, I felt that didn't go well. Josh, what are you
so
doing?
You? I'm just clarifying. You'd have gone Torreira.
Yep. And never pick Guendouzi over Torreira. That's my
and you'd have gone Pepe instead of...
I would have gone Pepe instead of Lacazette, I think. Right. I mean, I've been defending Lacazette.
Yeah.
But I think finally... I mean, actually, that's slightly wise after the event. I would say definitely after yesterday's game. Which I think yesterday's game was, I think, for the first all-round disappointing performance from Lacazette. I think, you know, his lack of goal scoring has been...
He's without a goal in eight now.
He hasn't scored away since last February. It's
much a homer in that sense. And I think his worst run in Arsenal because he's about... is no goals in nine. So. Right.
But I think up till now, I felt like even not scoring, he's been playing decently, sometimes playing well, you know, vary. But I think yesterday it felt like a noticeable dip. Oh,
he missed that chance early on, didn't he?
Yeah, the header.
So he had that header, which he absolutely should have scored, 100% should have scored. And I felt like, what chance to make, you know, what difference that makes, isn't it? That moment. You know, that's the game, I mean, one for me, if you score in the first, whatever it was, 8 minutes with an easy header. And he completely didn't go anywhere near
it. It's got to be confidence with him because he's a very, very good player, and I still believe in him. But he's just,
he gives Arsenal balance.
Yeah, and he works. I think he works hard. I mean, he's just going through one of those horrendous spells that strikers go through.
Back to the team selection a second. Don't you think we said this a little bit in the last podcast? We talked about how our forward player Martinelli particularly played so well. Mm. You know, in the last few games, that he had to incorporate him in the team, in the league, in this league lineup. So then, and I feel like he's being loyal to Ozil and Lacazette. Do you feel that when you saw that line, do you think, okay, that's fine, or did you have question marks?
I mean, the interesting thing, obviously, Aubameyang coming off a ban, he's your top goal scorer, he comes back in, doesn't he? I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And then what do you do with everybody else around it? Martinelli's been better on the left-hand side. The combination of Martinelli and Saka has been excellent, isn't it? Yeah. They play for each other, a lot of energy, a lot of covering. And that actually includes Xhaka as well. When Saka goes forward,
Xhaka fills it.
I mean, that's been so pronounced, hasn't it, since Arteta has come.
Yeah.
And that was a real issue, I think, under Unai Emery, the sort of lack of cover. And then how do you... And then Aubameyang, whenever I've seen him on the right, which has been... only a few occasions, he's not really performed as well. So who do you shift across? So, I mean, maybe Mikel did get it wrong for this one. It didn't seem as natural as the other ones because there were too many smaller changes. That
yeah,
didn't come
then you
off.
can have. It's a challenge, isn't it? To incorporate. I felt like, you know, it was one of the many things that Emery didn't get right. He never worked out how to incorporate our forwards into a coherent. But I think I felt like Arteta. I mean, I know we've scored fewer goals. I think we've had fewer shots. Under Arteta than we did even under Emery, but we'll go on to that. He's fixing the defence, which I think is the most important issue. But he still had a fairly potent attack up until, you know, in terms of, like, he has that five, doesn't he, kind of sweeping forward across the line. It feels like he's working out a way to incorporate all these players. But yesterday felt like it wasn't. But he's unlucky, isn't he? Because we lost Saka. And I felt like until that point we started well. I mean, first 10-15 minutes. We lost Saka, and I felt like...
Well, Burnley, to be fair, changed it, didn't they?
They changed
and
it as well.
It was documented and highlighted at the time when I was watching the game, but then also on Match of Day 2 with the analysis they did about the pockets of space that Ozil was finding and the midfield pressing to it, and they just solved it, Burnley. And after they solved it, 25 minutes in, apart from what you say, Aubameyang's chance...
And then the header in the
second
half. Boots
wide and the header.
Yeah, and they were probably... Burnley
did
deserve to win. That was one of the few games under Arteta where I actually thought we got... pretty lucky to
more than we deserved
the other ones I thought have been, we were a bit unlucky against Chelsea when we lost, but the rest we were there or thereabouts. This one we should have lost, and that one they hit the bar and then we got lucky.
You didn't mention Mustafi. I thought you were gonna in one of the substitutions or things that have changed. You haven't mentioned Mustafi.
Oh no, I mean Mustafi, yeah, we were it was surprising Mustafi mainly because he seemed to have been quite heavily injured. And he miraculously came on. He was probably our man of the match, wasn't he? I mean, he had a really good game.
Well, I don't mind him if he's up against someone like Chris Wood.
Chris Wood,
like a no-nonsense. He can get tight to him. He knows that he's not going to get turned. He's not going to be involved in a foot race. I mean, one of his best ever games was when he played against Diego Costa at Emirates and Arsenal won 3-0 a few years ago. And he was brilliant against Costa because he knows what you're going to get. You're going to get a battle and he's up for it. Mm. It's when it's a different type of striker, he might struggle a little bit. I mean, his distribution is a bit on and off, as we know. But I think up against Chris Wood or players of that ilk, and Ashley Barnes didn't play us today, but he's not the worst, I don't think.
Against the tricky players who are going to turn quite
And there are more of them than there in are the Chris Premier Woods. League than there are the sort of Chris Woods.
Yeah, you knew exactly what you were getting. There was no, it was going to be Rodriguez and Wood. Yeah. There was no two ways about it. Bit of a recovery from Mustafi from, you know, being left out of the 18 to then being on the bench and now...
Oh, completely, you know, yeah. Selected. I mean, it's incredible. I mean,
is he ahead of Socrates, do you think?
Well...
I wonder
I don't know why Socrates is now out of favour with Arteta.
Well, it's just this game, though, isn't it? I mean, there's a couple of things. I felt like maybe he was trying stuff out a bit in this game because both in not picking Socrates and in not picking Pepe and picking and incorporating that front line. I saw someone on Twitter going, "Oh, you know, all the managers have an issue with Pepe, clearly, but he's been playing Pepe regularly until yesterday."
Yeah,
and then you could see a logical reason why he wanted Martinelli. He had, you know, because Martinelli absolutely played himself into the team.
Yeah,
and I felt like he's being loyal to Ozil. We'll get onto that later. So that's why I felt he dropped Pepe. Not, I don't think he dropped Pepe. I think not bringing him on was weird. Didn't you think? Like,
yeah, I thought he might come on at some stage.
Yeah, because we definitely lacked a kind of threat. And for me, like he had exactly what we lacked, like some kind of dribbling wide threat.
Yeah, and he's you know, he doesn't shirk a challenge. He's quite happy to sort of go shoulder to shoulder and put his body on the line. I don't think he's a player that ducks away from stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. And he's been very positive when he has come on. Yeah, he's made mistakes and given the ball away, but he's, you know, been positive and gone forward. Yeah, it was a surprise to see him left on the bench. It was Eddie who got thrown on.
Later on.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? But just to go back to your thing about Mustafi and Xhaka playing. So I've got in the Stat Zone app, which I have got, they have this...
We're not sponsored by them, are we?
No.
I haven't missed that one. Okay.
I think I'm fucking paying for it and everything. But it's really helpful.
You're open to maybe sponsoring.
We're always open.
Declaring absolutely. That, yeah.
But they do have this player influence graphic where they show, you know, the size of the player's name shows you, and I'll just show you. It's got, so Xhaka, our most influential players were Xhaka, Luiz, Mustafi and Bellerin, quite interestingly.
Well, it probably shows what half of the pitch was busier than the other half.
There is that. But then you've got Aubameyang all right, Torreira all right. Torreira quite big considering he only came on.
You know, can't imagine where this is going.
Well, what it's going is you can barely see Ozil. I mean, it's imperceptible, I'll show you. You just can't find him. And I do feel like, you know, come on, I feel like... Yes, they. You know, all the Ozil fanboys, and there are many, many, legion of them. You know, were furious with Emery, weren't they, for kind of dispensing with him seemingly. And then he brought him back into the fold, and they were like, "See, we told you so." And he kind of played all right in the first game, which I think was against some shit team. And then under Arteta, has brought him in. And he, you know, for me, like I've always said, play best players. And he definitely is, in theory, one of our best players, and I've been supporting the fact. But then yesterday, it crystallised for me the issue, which he just does not contribute enough, does he? So he's running around more, and he tackled, and you know, got booked, didn't he, yesterday? And but the contribution once as you say, Burnley changed their dealt with him, if you like, it was over.
When's the last time he made a really meaningful contribution? I'm sorry, I'm not a fanboy. I mean, I can see his abilities, but for me, he's a player that was relevant in the team 2-3 years ago. And actually, players like him have lost relevance again. That old-fashioned number 10, just I can't see it fitting into our style, let alone the Premier League.
I think the Premier League, you know, luxury players probably over-egging. Every single person has to contribute fully. Hmm. You know, there is no like, well, we just let him play. He can do what he wants. Liverpool don't have players like that. Manchester City don't have players like that. You can't have players that will only do it every now and then. I mean, I was always told that from a few ex-pros that, well, as long as he does it at some stage and gets his wins, we don't mind if he doesn't track back. I think that era is probably gone. Now, I don't think he's played particularly badly. I mean, his assist total this season is pretty poor. I think he's got 2 in all comps. But
he's lost away assist is like... Eons ago, isn't it? Just before
great.
He signed his new contract.
76 assists in 250
My issue with him
games.
Is not, by the way, the hard work. I feel like...
He's putting a shift in.
Hard work is mandatory, but it's a different hard work.
But he's having no impact on game. Hardly any impact. He had one lovely moment in the game yesterday where he kind of back-kicked it, backflip kick or something like that, and I was watching it with my mate, and he was like, "Oh, that's brilliant from us." And I was like, and that was it. It was like one or two amazing moments, and then the rest of the time, and I feel like that's why he's infuriating. I think as soon as Arteta came, I felt like he was working hard, But it's just for a creative play in that mould to create. So,
but no one was creating that.
No, yes, I know. But
we created nothing as a team, really. I mean, that second half.
But players like Martinelli and Xhaka.
Martinelli was quiet yesterday.
No, I know. I'm talking generally in recent times. The players who have actually given us assists and have created, come up with stuff, are the young players like, you know, Pepe, Martinelli, Xhaka. These are creating our chances. Yeah. Not Ozil.
I have to say, I play Willock every day ahead of Ozil in that.
I thought Willock was brilliant.
He came on, he did well, didn't he?
And had a bit more energy.
Here's that more number time. Right. Carries the ball with them, goes on runs. I mean, he worked hard as well. And I'm not doubting Ozil worked hard.
So I'm now wondering, having said play your best players, I don't think Ozil is one of our best players now. I just don't think he's... I agree with you. I would play Willock over him, or certainly Pepe over him.
The only thing you're going to get... I mean, with Willock and all the young players, you're going to get peaks and troughs. Mm. And if you play if you play too many young players, you are liable to occasionally the team's going up pull and get run over on the odd occasion.
When Freddie's last game he played,
What is this season? I mean, it kind of this season for me is almost pre-season for next season. So why not? I mean, it's not, you know.
There's an element of that, you've got to get out of the danger of relegation.
But once you're clear of that, then I'd love to. This should be a brilliant opportunity to give all these young players the chance.
It's just how many you play, I think, and when you play. I don't think you can go full Freddie and play them all. You know, and play them a lot. I think that was a mistake at the time. There's still points to play for. There's, you know, because of the condensed nature of that middle, whatever it is in the Premier League, you've still got to think about finishing 6th or 7th through Europa League spot or whatever. Mm. However you might get in, I know there's still FA Cup and Europa League, but you can't give up on potentially what 7th place might be.
To me, it's not giving up. I
think if you play too many young players, you are in pre-season mode. You're absolutely right, and I don't think that's the right thing to do. Yeah.
But I agree with playing Willock over Ozil right now. I just think he's going to. I think he's probably going to give you more. In terms of energy and running with the ball, as soon as he came on, he was like provided much more energy to me.
I think Arteta's shown he likes it because he's the one that's always gets the opportunity to come off the bench and play. So it's not probably unthinkable that he is going to get a Premier League start in the next couple of games. It feels like that's coming.
It was weird, wasn't it? Ainsley Maitland-Niles wasn't
in the squad.
Do we know why? Because I haven't seen anyone ask him about that.
Not injured for what I know. I mean, obviously Cedric's come in as backup right back, and I think Mikel has suggested that Ainsley isn't a right back. And Ainsley himself, in an interview this year, has said, "I want to play midfield."
Yeah. But he's done well in that position, hasn't he? Up until when he's had to play.
I think defensively he's still a bit short.
Sure.
I think he's good on the ball.
Concentration quite frequently as a defender.
You'd think his opportunities now are hugely limited. You know, will he get another game at right back this season? It'd be incredibly unlikely that Hector and Cedric are going to be out, even with the European games. He's not really going to get an opportunity there.
Cedric's injured, though.
But only for a couple of weeks. Yeah. I think by the time Newcastle comes around
again.
That's
an odd signing.
We have to address that, don't we? It's an odd signing, isn't it?
It's not that odd.
Really? You got like 5 million or whatever to spend. You get a fullback when...
Southampton were laughing all the way to the bank.
Did you read the story in the Athletic? Said they were shocked and stunned. Yeah.
Time that Arsenal have gone for a player that surprised.
If it wasn't his, when I saw the pictures of him, there was the figure of Kia Jorbachian lurking to his right as he was signing a probably quite a nice size contract for a short.
But he's out of contract in the summer, so if he does could pick him up for nothing.
Exactly.
But it does feel like this thing about this Jorbachian is interesting, isn't it? Like we're now in the situation where we're buying players.
Do you not think Cedric could work out as a
second choice right back?
Is that a kind of key issue for the team right now?
It's only recently that I felt that Hector is absolutely back up to speed, or at least sort of 98-99%, because initially this season way off the pace, didn't he? Even the games he played in Europa League. So I still think there might be a concern of playing him in every single game. So if you've got an experienced backup, I don't think that's a problem between now and the end of the season.
Wouldn't you go for a young backup?
Is Southampton's second choice?
Yeah.
And then
he
comes to us.
Well, Southampton's stats. The stats were interesting because he didn't play at the start. He was on loan at Inter for the back end of last season and didn't really play that often.
Yeah.
And then when he played, when Southampton played at Emirates this season, he played, but it was only like his third or fourth game, and I wondered why at the time. But since then, he had been in pretty much every single game over the last two months.
Okay.
Because there's a young French fullback, I think, Southampton that played occasionally and sort of has been in a...
I mean, buying a Portuguese international in the mid-20s, it's very low-risk purchase. Okay, and we don't... Look at every other club. They've got a better... Like second choice right back option, we got Maitland-Niles, who's publicly saying I don't want to play
that. I know. All right, okay, I accept that. But what is interesting, we're definitely going down a different route, aren't we? Of embracing, we've gone from Wenger absolutely not wanting to work with those super agents, like Jurabshin, to now us seemingly Edu being mates with all of them, and like kind of absolutely. I'm not accusing him of any kind of dodgy dealing. Let me be clear, but it's a completely different way of working.
Shortcutting the process is leading it to two or three, contacts to go and do your business for you.
I mean, to be honest, I'm more in favour of this than I am of not working with them, because I think that you're just shooting yourself in the foot if you're not going to work with the most powerful agents, because they're going to attract the best players, aren't they? It's not the end of the world. It's not a huge issue. What do we think of the I wanted to ask about the Aubameyang miss as well. So first of all, the Lacazette miss, which was terrible. The Aubameyang miss was mystifying to me. I was like, what was he trying to do?
Yeah, I took it with his wrong foot almost.
It was weird, wasn't it? Yeah. Is that just, you just put that down to he's been out for three games and he's been rusty?
I'm never quite sure about his ring rustiness. I probably said it at the time, but surely they're training and they're playing. I mean, what is the difference? I mean, he's an experienced guy. I thought that was a bit disappointing, I must admit.
It was weird, wasn't it?
I mean, the header was quite close. I mean, he got a bit of sticks in. Should have scored the header. I mean, he
wasn't a horrendous effort.
Wasn't the worst effort.
Should get it on target.
But. Yeah.
Yeah, but we had two really good chances in the first.
Very early on, yeah.
Very early on. And to not. It's like you compare us. I was about to compare us to Liverpool, but, I think most big teams, if they've had those chances away at Burnley, you just would have confirmed
one.
It's very. Our record, it's weird, isn't it? So you talk about the concertina nature of the league, which is bizarre. It is incredible. Like if you win a game, you can shoot up like three or four places. Like Spurs are now fifth, aren't they?
Yeah. Are they 4 points behind Chelsea?
Infuriating victory over Man City. Infuriatingly lucky victory, I think they are. But it's so constant, isn't it? It's weird. And also, our number of draws is just bewildering.
13.
13.
It and is. The Premier League record, do you know the Premier League record?
No, I don't.
What do you reckon it is in a 38-game Premier League season?
Did Leeds have about... 19 or 20?
17. Oh, 17. So we are going to be some record-breaking gunning here again.
What was the invincible season? 12.
26 wins, 12 draws. Yeah, 17. I looked up what's going on. So we are well on the way to breaking a Premier League record.
What we call the team that draws the most record number of games in a season?
Drawables. Drawables.
We've lost as many games as Man City, though. Six games.
Yeah, it's such a weird season, isn't it? Is there any explanation for that? Apart from just... I don't know.
I just think it is. It's a huge outlier, isn't it? The way that everyone, no one seems to be getting any sort of run together, whether it's, Arsenal or, Man United or Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea started well and then dropped away, and even City now are in this sort of odd position where they obviously not going to win the league, but they're so comfortable in terms of Champions League spots. What do they do? We're only just into February. I think it's just a very odd season. I don't know why. Do you say that the sort of Burnleys and Sheffield Uniteds of this world are much better than they were? I don't know. I mean, I think
that's, there's some truth in that, isn't there?
Yeah,
do you think
so.
Graham? Like, I feel like generally the Premier League is much better.
Yeah.
I think like those
much more even.
Much more even, isn't it? Apart from Liverpool.
But Liverpool have won every single game.
Apart from them, we've slipped down into the pack, definitely.
Yeah.
Chelsea have slipped down into the pack. Spurs have gone off. I mean, all the teams that were Champions League, they're in thereabouts every season, have got worse.
I think, though, when Arsenal move the ball well, they can do things that Sheffield United and Burnley cannot. There is still much more quality, I think, anyway, in
Arsenal's goal against Bournemouth, the 22-pass goal, right, against Wolves was fantastic. But then did you see on the Sky coverage, they put up the stats saying, I think we're top of the league of how many passes we have before we score, to which... I think Graham Souness went, that's nothing to be proud of, because Liverpool are like, fourth or fifth. That is interesting. I feel like that's part of the whole draw, because we're taking, I mean, under Wenger, famously, we were always taking too many touches. Now it's become ridiculous. Like, now I feel like we're going through, we're taking more control over games. I mean, even yesterday, I think we had 58% possession. It didn't feel like we did.
But no, it didn't, but the possession stats for Arsenal.
But so much of it is passing back and passing across, and there's a lot of that. And I'd rather they had some control over the game than when under Emery we were facing 30 shots a game. But I feel like we've gone completely the other way. And I feel that's why we're drawing so many games. I feel like they're kind of... they're not really stepping up somehow. They're kind of, there's a fear still about them.
I think, as you mentioned before, I think Arteta's coming and the first thing is don't lose games and try it, and that was an issue earlier, conceding goals, and Arsenal are certainly better on that front.
Yeah. But, and if you're glass half full, that is the step to building a team. I think so. You start off by, I mean, George Graham did it brilliantly. You didn't lose games and then you've always got a chance of nicking it. Unfortunately, we don't look that brilliant going forward.
Well, that's strange, isn't it? Because
we're now talking about one or two opportunities.
If we were talking about this right at the start of the season, then last season we said, well, at least we can score.
Yeah.
Because that's that was sort of the case, wasn't it? It's like, well, at least you've got, X, Y, Z who can put in there.
To be fair to say, Urbino, the Arsenal supporting stats guy, dude, had this interesting thing. In the shots per game for Arsenal, under Emery it was 12.5, went down to 10 under Freddie, now it's 9.6 under Arteta. But shots we allow against us, Emery was 16.8, down to 13.8 under Freddie, now down to 12.4. So I feel like I'm giving Arteta more credit for minus four, almost five goals fewer, we're conceding per game, and only two fewer in terms of shots. Because so I feel like actually,
A bit of progress.
I feel it is progress. But for me, like, we've needed to sort out the defence for years and years, haven't we? And for some, and I think I am giving him a huge amount of credit for somehow getting fairly decent.
It's the same players.
Same players, right? Games out. I mean, out of the Mustafis of this world, they are playing better.
It's the team. I think it's the collective. It's the way that the midfield aren't allowing those breaks that were exposing us the whole time, those tactical fouls. It's just, it's maybe more sensible football.
Yeah, I think
there's definitely a strategy. Yeah. I can see the thing that gives me a bit of grounds for optimism is that there's a plan there, there's a strategy there, and they're trying to do something. Whether they haven't pulled it off yet, but it's early doors, and I feel they're moving slowly in a direction of travel that they weren't moving in for the last year. That's, otherwise I can't be overly optimistic, but that's sort of my middle ground optimistic. And I can see us doing something, whereas before I just couldn't see anything.
We'll talk more about what we think is happening with the Arsenal under Arteta after this break. And we're back from the break. Graham, what's your feeling in general? Do you think, did yesterday's team selection and performance, bearing in mind we were unlucky to lose Saka, I think we have to. He has been unlucky. I've been saying this for weeks, Arteta. As new managers go, compared to Jose's having all the fucking luck in the world. Whereas I feel like, Mikel's having a bad time with injuries. And
we're onto our fourth choice left back yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. Yeah. And there was no option. I mean, putting Xhaka, and as soon as you put Xhaka out wide, I mean, you're not going to get any attacking threat. So the good question is, is yesterday just an outlier and just a kind of a blip in the Arteta history? Or what's your feeling about him generally? Do you think we're getting carried away with what we've been saying about him on the spot? We've been very positive about him. We've been accused of being too positive. Is yesterday proof that we're being too positive and we should kind of rein it in a bit? Or is it just a blip due to
I think it's work in progress. Arsenal, to me, is a bit of an oil tanker, and the time that it takes an oil tanker to turn around is probably about, in football terms, is how long it's going to take to turn this round. And I'm sort of quite pleased in a way that we didn't get that new manager bounce and win the first three games and everyone's sort of, singing Arteta's name from the stands. I'm quite pleased that it's just been a bit more slowly. I have, as I just said, I have noticed definitely a change in the way that we play, a change in style, a change in attitude, and that's it. I mean, I can't get overly excited, but I think he's a good guy. I like what he says. I like the cut of his jib and early doors, but, I'm not going to rave about it, but, I don't want to get too overexcited, but I'm confident.
Just because you are, as Boy said, the PR guru. A lot of people made a lot of his first press conference and the way he speaks. And I think journalists, Dan might be able to agree on this, but certainly the Arsenal journalists I speak to seem happier to have to now deal with Arteta rather than the difficulties of an Emery press conference. How do you think he's come across?
Well, he's a great communicator. Yeah. I think he's very honest. He often says when he doesn't think we played well, he'll say we haven't played well. You understand what he's saying for a start, and he seems to have quite a, with journalists anyway, seems quite relaxed and seems to relax them quite a lot. I wasn't sure yesterday he started going on a little bit about the grass grass and the length of the grass and are not watering it properly. It was kind of like a Wenger-like comment as well. It's a very subtle technical detail that you might have otherwise missed. You know, and that was a bit of an excuse.
The focus is on that today, isn't it? You listen to the phone-ins and you look at message boards and, you know, there's a lot of focus on that. It's a bit of deflection. It's a bit of Wenger, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, even Pep is, you know, his teacher down the road was saying about how...
Yeah, he's talking about the Premier League.
Saying it was no fun when City won the title by 18 points and now. So
I think
he's impressive. I think you can tell he is a leader of men, and I was never quite sure with Unai, and that might be a language thing, but you can imagine Mikel standing up in front of a group. I mean, apparently he visited the various different departments within Arsenal and so on. And you can imagine he commands attention and respect straight away. From what I know, when he was at the club and I interviewed him twice, he was a guy who was not one of the lads, but still had a lot of respect and was not a rabble rouser, but someone who spoke with measure and again commanded respect. And when he first came to the club, I think him and Per Mertesacker joined at the same time and changed little things in dressing rooms and you know the way that they went about their sort of daily business. He does a lot of things well off the pitch, and you hope that he's got that tactical sort of acumen and footballing brain, which I'm sure he has.
And the lack of experience has never fussed me. I think that sometimes can be quite an advantage as well, because you don't get stuck into doing the same thing that hasn't worked before. And you try stuff that you don't know that you can't do, and that naivety sometimes can be really good. You see it with the kids, actually. You've got the naivety of youth. Mm. Yeah, sometimes they get caught out, but most of the time they're fearless and they go for things. And
I think we saw that at Chelsea. I mean, I know he was going to bring on, was it Rob Holding, because of the sending off the David Luiz, and then he just waited for a second. Now 99% of coaches, managers, you know, a centre half gets sent off, you put a midfielder there for a few minutes, and then you change it and you step back, and he thought about it, he got him ready, and hang on, I've got a response here, so I'm going to go what I see, kept the shape. And that massively worked out. Agreed. I mean, Ozil stayed on the pitch. Well, he's going to get the hook straight away, but he stayed on the pitch just for the shape of the side, I think. And it sort of snookered Chelsea and Lampard, who probably did a job on Arteta when they met at Emirates. I thought it was the other way around at Stamford Bridge. So you're right. I think he's, you know, he does do things a little bit differently.
He does take his time over substitutions, doesn't he? I mean, I've seen him change his mind over substitutions quite frequently.
Yeah, we did it about three times.
Yeah, which I think is, I mean, I'd have no problem with it. Yesterday, I have a slight problem with how long it took to bring on Pepe, as I've already said. But generally, I think it's better that he's being thoughtful, I guess. What were you about to say?
He didn't bring on Pepe at all.
He didn't bring on Pepe at all. You're right, yeah.
I was going to say, Graham, you mentioned earlier about how this season is almost pre-season for next season, and you'd experiment potentially with the kids. But from the brand point of view, Arsenal, I just don't think we realise. Arsenal not having European football for the first time since, what, 93? Something like that?
God, I don't know, yeah.
I mean, that is unthinkable.
But it's looking more likely than unlikely.
You can't, I mean, talk about being out of the Champions League, damaging the club and the brands. Being out of Europe entirely, that. You know, I mean, I just think our biggest hope is still probably finishing 6th, 7th.
To
win the Europa League, still going to be a chance.
There'll be a perverse pressure on Arsenal next season if not in European football, simply because Leicester and Chelsea both won the league when they didn't have any European football in the last few years.
Mm. Which is an interesting point, yeah.
So some would be like, this is a massive opportunity because, you know, it happened to those two clubs more recently.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm weirdly zen about... I mean, I kind of feel we will finish. I think I feel like... Particularly, because we've got this two-week gap now. Holiday in Dubai. Yeah.
Nice pictures coming out today of all the team on the beach.
Yeah, their partners are welcome. They can have a lovely, relaxing time. But also, I feel like he's had a very hectic schedule, hasn't he? As soon as he arrived, he had game after game after game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had to almost like, you know, he was training them at the Emirates and, you know, just then. So they'll be in two games in 4 hours. Now he's got two. The contrast is extraordinary, isn't it? He's gone from hectic whirlwind as soon as he arrived to 2 weeks with the players. Now I'm fascinated as what he's going to do, because I almost feel like he went with the Ozils and kept the Lacazette going despite his
form. Got experience back
in. Right. I feel like he's kind of kept with the experience best players. And that felt totally logical, but I wonder what he's going to do now with 2 weeks with them to do what he wants to do and to really fathom out the best, you know, tactical formation, the best team selection, all of that. What is going to happen in 2 weeks? So I mean, do you think my question is, do you think
all that forward line, do you think Lacazette is living on borrowed time? Do you think he has to drop him, really, and
I think it depends on how he wants to play. I mean, the thing with Aubameyang is you look at his goal-scoring record and it's just phenomenal.
Mm.
So how do you take him out of the picture? But he's 30 now, isn't 31, he?
Yeah.
31 now, yeah. He's just 31, isn't he? So, and you potentially could get some resale value on him in the summer. So do you go with him? Or Lacazette is 28.
Mm.
You know, do you keep one of them? You think he has to. Do you keep both? Maybe not. You know, Pepe's 24. Martinez 18. So I think.
Nketiah.
Yeah,
Pepe,
yeah.
You seem quite bullish about.
I'm very pro Pepe. I mean, I just feel. I mean, if you look at I think his contribution. You know, I think he provides something we haven't got, we haven't had for a long time.
Are you suggesting that for the rest of the season, that's what he starts to look at now? Does he start to plan without
Absolutely.
Potentially one of those 100. Two or both of
I
those
think,
two?
Yeah, for me, I think he has to plan. I think if you really stand back and look at it, Ozil has to not be first choice. I think he's yesterday's man. I just think, you know, I mean, there's been enough evidence from the club and how he plays that he's not the future. I think Willock and Pepe are the future. Pepe has to be the future because you can't spend that amount of money on him, you know, and then not try and make it work. And I feel like he's going to try and make it work. And I also think he's a really exciting prospect. I mean, I think we really missed his, you know, his corners, and by the way, yesterday.
Yeah, yeah,
his
that's
corner
true.
Taking is just that's phenomenal. True. So all of that, I'd absolutely pick Pepe. So I'd definitely pick those
so
over.
Who would you take out of?
I've been Lacazette's, you know, I've been staunchly defending him.
But he's the one to go.
When you say go, leave in the summer.
If you're gonna lose one of Aubameyang or him, then yeah.
You don't have to.
I'd be happy for them both to stay, by the way.
We end up not getting a fee for one of them in year and
I
a
mean,
half.
You know, you have to be mature. But I'm a very immature fan. I love these. You know, I love Lacazette and Aubameyang as a duo. You know, I've got my photo with them from when I met.
I think the fact is,
if
Aubameyang won't sign a contract,
sure,
then they'll sell him in the summer because they'll get 25, 30 million from him in the summer, and they'll get zero from
that is
anything
what
after that. 100%.
That will be the club's attitude. If we're going in for players like Cedric at, you know, a bit of value, I don't think we're going to be allowing someone like Aubameyang to leave without a fee.
Oh God, yeah, no, you've got 100%. But I think
he's
somehow
the club captain. I mean,
he's the club captain.
I suspect
they'll
make more effort to keep him than Lacazette.
I think they'll make more effort to keep him than Lacazette. Yeah, I do, and I wonder whether
Lacazette is a little bit of a blip. I think hold your breath on Lacazette. That's what I'll say.
I'd like to agree. I'd like to hold my breath.
It's too good. It's quality.
He is quality,
and he knows what he's doing. I feel sorry for him. He's still working hard.
Yeah.
And these things tend to pay off.
And it's completely mental, isn't it?
Also,
like,
we're not scoring a lot of goals as a club at the moment. No. So, you know, all it takes is a little bit of a run.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I was looking at the odds yesterday. We were at even money. We weren't offered even money to beat Burnley. And I'm like, we've played 24 games prior to yesterday and won 6 of them. How are we going off? But all it needs is a little run of games now. And we do have potentially...
There's a good run coming up, isn't
games
it?
Now. Yeah. And it,
but we said this in the Emery period. Do you remember after Christmas?
But this is the first time under Arteta we go, okay, you've had your 2 weeks.
I know.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
We have got to hit the ground running and get back. I mean...
We do.
Got to. I mean, the idea we've won 6 games and it's February.
Yeah,
you'd be disappointed if we won 6 away games and it's February and most seasons gone by even under the great Arsene Wenger. So
yeah, it is unbelievable. Yeah, but I also think he's going to be. I think there's two things, isn't he? We've got to get a winning run together and do well in the Europa League and all of that.
Invariably, a big winning run, you feel like one of Lacazette and Aubameyang is going to click into gear, and hopefully it's Lacazette because it's the longer it goes on, the more you.
So what
worry
would you
about his confidence,
Dan? What would you do? What would your front line be? How would you mix to keep the? Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
I think at some stage Martinelli will be taken out of the firing line a little bit. I think I think Mikel might go back to sort of Aubameyang left, Pepe right, Lacazette through the centre, and Ozil in behind.
Well, I think
Martinelli might start to become a sub again.
But the player that did look like he was going to start right most times under Arteta instead of Pepe before he got injured was Reece Nelson, who should be back after the winter break.
I would
be tempted to start him ahead of Pepe. I mean,
For
Pepe, for me, I get excited by Pepe because we paid £72 million.
Yeah, the price tag puts a lot of excitement
but
in
I'd
there.
Look at him and I honestly think if he was a £20 million player, I could very easily see that more than I can see him being a £70 million player. And, you know, for me, Reece Nelson, excites me more than Pepe does at the moment to have in the team. I think he's a better player for the team and a better Arteta type player.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm not suckered in by the 72 million.
Okay, I am suckered in by the... Oh, I'm suckered in by...
I get suckered in by the...
I think he's... I'd play him. I think he's had some great moments.
I think he's better than Nelson at the moment.
Yeah, I think at the moment.
Nelson's ceiling, we don't know what that is. And he you know, I don't buy into his season in Germany as much as some, because it started well and then it sort of petered out a little bit and he was a sub more often than not. And he's had injury issues this season, so it's difficult.
I agree totally with Dan. I think Martinelli will come out of that starting.
Yeah. And that's a bit of a Wenger thing to do, to pull the younger guy. But
yeah,
Mikel Arteta has given him a massive opportunity and by and large he's taken it. It was quiet on Sunday. Okay, that happens. I think he might be partly due to the setup,
I think, more than anything. Because that playing, you know, he was playing.
You've got to be protective of him as well. I mean, you know, we want to see him playing stuff and he'll want to play every single game, but you've got to manage him.
Also, he can play him in the cup games, can't he? He can play him in the FA Cup, you know,
Portsmouth to come
and the Europa maybe.
Well, two Europa League games within, you know, the 11 days after we're back. Yeah. So he's definitely going to get game time and opportunities. You're not going to affect his confidence.
I mean, he will know that he is the
He wouldn't have dreamt of being on the bench. I mean, never mind starting Premier League games. It's been an extraordinary rise.
And also, would you sit with him?
Yeah, I like Willock, but the same rules apply, and I would still heavily feature Ozil between now and the end of the season. And then, you know, you see what happens with him, because he's still got an awful lot of quality, and Willock can still have off days. But I mean, I thought Willock at Bournemouth was brilliant. He was man of the match for me by a stretch. I don't know who actually got the
management. And what
did you
make of that story last week with Ozil and deadline day and having an offer?
I don't know if that was true or not. I mean, it was an odd one, because the whole discussion about it is as well, who can afford him? Well, they can, obviously. Mm-hmm. I know that he likes London. We've had this conversation before, and I think he wants to stay in the capital. But, you know, if from an Arsenal point of view, you could make it difficult for him to stay, and maybe if Unai Emery was still here.
And if he got 2-3 years at that rate, he'd have to do it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know how much truth there was in that. Mm. But it was an interesting story, because the whole thing about, well, no one's going to pay his money, he might go to Turkey and it might be a half and half situation. Mm. Was that an opportunity to get him off the books? Not taken, or was it not real?
Well, I like him, but for me, it was good while it lasted with him. And I think we've got to move end of the Ozil era for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that, definitely.
But I still think he's got a massive part to play this season. I think Mikel Arteta has looked at the senior players and relied on them a little bit since he's come. Yeah.
Well, he knows him as well.
Of course he does. I mean, he played with Ozil, obviously. Yeah. So.
Mm. And Guendouzi,
Arteta came in, Torreira's played in his proper position.
Right. It was weird. Again, that was like, why did he pick Guendouzi over Torreira? I didn't get that.
He played all right.
He played all right in the cup game.
Maybe from a height point of view.
Maybe.
Really?
Just again, but big team.
But Guendouzi doesn't head the ball. He can't head the ball.
But he's tall.
He's taller than Torreira. Everyone's taller than Torreira. Yeah, I mean, even I'm taller than Torreira, but he doesn't really contribute in the air.
You're not actually taller than Torreira.
I think, you know, it's one of those things where officially he's taller than me, but look, he's tiny.
How tall are you?
Tiny. I don't think, I'm 5 foot six, just about, five and a half,
I think
six.
Torreira's
all right, don't look at me like that. I think Torreira's officially 5 foot seven, but I don't believe it.
No,
it's ridiculous. He's tiny.
He's added like an inch to...
Yeah, I think so. No footballer wants to be considered that small, I don't think. So I think they have, you know, but... As I said right at the beginning, I can't fathom picking... For me, one of Emery's biggest mistakes was constantly picking Guendouzi over Torreira. Yeah.
And when he did play Torreira, he played in some odd positions and he played quite far forward on the...
As soon as Arteta came in, he fixed that. And then yesterday, I thought like that was a big contributing factor.
What Wikipedia says 5'6".
Oh, okay. And Wiki's now make him about
equal. Well, are you going to go to the Arsenal Player of the Year? What didn't you go last year with? You went to the Arsenal.
I did. Yeah.
Charity event.
Yeah. I think
get a photo with him and stand up straight, and we'll see. Mm. Back to back.
Point, yeah.
That's the photo we want.
One of them.
Mm. Yeah. Back to back.
I'll try and sort that out. I will. Yeah. I love him. He'd be like my first pick one of my first picks every game. I think he's such an important player to us.
He was already on his Instagram on the beach in Dubai, showing off.
Drinking his. His
coconut
home
water,
brew.
Is it?
No. He's drinking his that.
Oh, the maca tea, drink. Whatever it is.
Yeah, he had that on the beach.
What's it called?
Matcha.
I don't know the one.
Matcha. Matcha.
Very highly caffeinated.
Yeah, all the South American players have it. I want to say matcha, but I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Yeah. Not Carabao. God, that's a good picture of him. Yeah.
Yes, he's got a very number of tattoos. I don't know who that lady is on his leg.
This is good for the podcast. He's
handing me his phone. I'm looking at Torreira's tattoo.
Yeah, describe the tattoo.
He's got like a weird, like old woman baby figure on his arm.
I've never noticed that.
It's really bizarre.
His family. We shouldn't probably say weird because it's probably a member of his family. Yeah?
I mean, it could be some terrible story. If that's not his mum on his leg, then I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely his mum.
His mum's grandmother.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good to see them getting some rest and relaxation.
Did you see?
It's like Claire Balding.
Did you see, there's a big contrast, isn't there, between us and, did you see Liverpool? Obviously, Liverpool, Klopp was asked, I don't know if it's over the weekend, you know, they're supposed to be playing their FA Cup replay and he's not getting involved at all. And he's taking them up, they're going off on their break. And he was asked, you know, are you keeping together? And he's like, no, like, we've seen enough of each other as it is. They're scattered to the wind, they can go wherever the hell they want. He's having to keep our lot together, albeit.
I don't mind that.
I think it's a perfect opportunity, isn't it, to sort us out. To give him time to sort us out and get them training as he wants them to.
It's a new thing as a Premier League fan to have a kind
of break. It's annoying, isn't it? I'm all in favour in theory, but 2 weeks without Premier League football is fucking furious.
Which is a bit odd, so it's a break, but it's not a break.
There's 2 weeks of great pictures on Instagram of all the players posting every day or video Instagram stories every day of them in Dubai. I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
Exactly. Now you put it in that.
Almost
Graham,
as much as the football.
Now you put it in that, I'm absolutely fully in favour of it. Isn't yeah. It? Yeah, I'll be following.
I don't think the train is going to be. I mean, it is going to be a break, isn't it? You know, I mean, families are there, are they, and that sort of stuff.
But they're all together. They're. Yeah. He's definitely. Yeah. Like,
so then, are the families going? Like, are they just there for the first sort of 4 or 5 days,
I don't know.
The hard business of football and training. I mean,
I don't. Do you think it's like conjugal visiting? Do you think they're allowed? You know, it's like.
So kind of basically loads of kids in 9 months' time as a result from all of this.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Did you see Arteta? This is what I noticed at the weekend. On closer. He's got a tattoo on one of his fingers.
I noticed that.
It's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. It's talking like his ring finger. It's like a ring on his finger.
It's like a tattoo of a ring or something. Yeah. It's weird.
I wouldn't have had him down as at all. I don't know why.
Especially not on your finger. Yeah, that's quite interesting. Dan, next time you see him, next time you bump into him.
I'd spotted that as well, actually, the first time.
Yeah. I have to say I'm really looking forward to the thing that Dermot does. I'm not sure if Dermot's hosting it this year, so I'm not sure if I'll get to go, but I do want to meet him and say hello. And
he's a very, very impressive guy. I mean, the story I always tell about Mikel Arteta, I don't know if we've got time for this one.
Go on, we've got time. This is the ending of the podcast.
All right. Well, I interviewed him twice, and once it was like a sit-down thing after a game, and the other time was at West Brom. Good few years ago, and I was asked to do his interview for the programme notes, and I got given questions by the editor of the programme, Andy, who said, look, you know, can you get him on this as well as the game? And unfortunately it was the time of the Bataclan terrorist attacks, and obviously he played at Paris Saint-Germain and whatever. So he said, could you ask him about this, because you know he still got links with the city, where I said, yeah, that's fine. So it's going to be quite an, you know, toughish interview for sort of dressing room after a game anyway. So I thought, well, I hope he's in the starting line. It wasn't in the starting line. I thought, oh, this is going to be hard talking about the game and batting. And then he came on in the second half. Oh, that's all right. And he'd just come back from injury, so that's quite nice. Then he scored an own goal, which obviously wasn't great. Then he came off injured, which obviously wasn't great either. So then I was asking him about terrorist attacks after the other. But he was absolutely fantastic.
So the question I'd always want to ask him is, which brand of haircare do you use?
Yes. I mean, the hair is extraordinary.
But which brand? I mean, from a commercial point of view, my PR hat on, I mean, that's where it is.
And I wonder if he has his a hairdresser, a kind of permanent, like Melvin Bragg, Lord Bragg. I know his hairdresser is a key figure in his life. He goes to the South Bank Show Awards every year, which I'm part of, and it's a big thing. I wonder whether Arteta has his own personal hairdresser who's there kind of all time, is to make sure that coiffed.
But it's a
thing.
Product. It's very, very product led.
Yeah, it's product led, really, but it's also very solid cut, though, isn't it? It's like a thing on his head, like a. You know, it's compared to what is it to a like a Lego thing, isn't
to
it?
To me, I've just been surprised from a media point of view that no one's really got to grips with that.
That is your PR guru.
Emery didn't have this.
No, oh my God. Yeah, I mean, Emery famously was lambasted by people for being all kinds of things, greasy haired. Yeah, people are.
I can't talk about hair, so, you know.
I mean, you know. You're looking at the. the boldest man in the room.
Follically, ballistically.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Follically challenged Arsenal podcast. I think we've descended into nonsense.
Are you looking forward to a week off then?
No, I mean, we are taking. We've got mid-season break for the podcast. Obviously, there's nothing to talk about.
Are we all going to Dubai now?
I mean, I feel like it. I feel like going to Dubai and watching them with their. With their tattoos, having a good time. Yeah, I'd love to.
Newcastle.
But sadly,
with their tats out.
Yeah, with their tats out. We've got Newcastle as the next actual game, isn't it? On the 16th of February. So, yeah, we're not going to do a podcast afternoon. Next week. No. Sunday afternoon, 4:30. We're going to do a prediction 2 weeks in advance. We have no fucking idea who's going to play, what it's going to do. Maybe we'll change the whole tactic. Maybe we'll play 4-3-3 or something. You know, who knows? I mean, he won't.
Well, he's stuck with that same formation
with it, isn't he?
Every
I meant
single
to ask that because
so
I'd like to see him try 4-3-3.
He's done a 4-2-3-1 every single game.
He has. What do you think is going to happen, Dan?
Well, I'm always very, very optimistic, as always. Newcastle are a strange side, aren't they? And they have had some half-decent results, but they're terrible to watch, I think, whenever I've seen them on the telly. But did they nick a win against Chelsea after being battered all game not so long ago?
Hayden's gone.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, he did, didn't he?
Former Gunner.
Yeah, good luck. Look, it's an Arsenal win. It's Newcastle at home.
It's got to be.
They could be the only club we do the double against this year.
Oh, yeah, we beat them early on, didn't we?
Yeah. So I'll go for a 2-0 Arsenal win.
Graham?
I fancy us to win. I think the break's going to do us good. We're feeling quite confident, but quietly confident. I think they're going to be a bit rejuvenated. They'll have lovely tans, that's for sure, from a couple of weeks in Dubai. They'll have obviously enjoyed their conjugal rights. I mean, they can't fail. I say 3-0.
Josh?
I think we'll win 1-0. I mean, I feel ridiculous. We've won six games this year. I feel nervous saying
all
it.
All we're talking about with the goals and they haven't been coming in.
I know.
Arsenal
will be what? 1-2 win the game or 2-5? I wouldn't be putting any money on it, but I do think and hope that
if I had any sense, I'd predict a draw because obviously that's how.
Yeah. That is the route to financial success.
I am going to boldly predict a 3-1 victory. Yeah.
Fantastic.
What score do you predict?
1-0.
1-0, okay.
Can I just mention before we go?
Yes.
I mentioned it very briefly last week. I'm putting on this charity football tournament at the Emirates ahead of the Arsenal-Everton game. So we're going to be in the Arsenal hub ahead of the game. So if anyone wants to come down, have a game of football with Nigel Winterburn and Perry Groves is going to be there. Two fantastic charities, North London Hospice and a High Cancer Care. So if anyone wants to come, just email me info@playwithalegend.com. Quite a few people did reply to me for mentioning on the podcast last week. So please do get in touch. We'd love to have you come down and join us for a couple of great courses.
Lovely. Do that. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back, I guess, like after the Newcastle
17th of Feb.
Yes, we are taking a mid-season break. Graham, thank you very much. Dan,
pleasure.
As ever. And Josh, and we'll be back then. Bye.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.